it turns off, that's the time the curtains will drop. Just kidding. Well, hopefully not. So I was trying to think of something that would be really pertinent to us tonight. And, you know, talking to you guys sometimes is a little difficult to come up with something that's going to be meaningful. But, you know, I got 30, 35 minutes to really talk to you. So the question is, you know, what can I really say, I guess, often? So I said, you know what? Let me just preach at myself. That'll probably be the best way that I'll come up with something that needs to be said. And if nobody else gets anything, at least I will. But hopefully what we talk about tonight will be helpful for you also. Tonight I want to talk about struggling with strength. The pitfalls... Oh, see? That was part of the trick. See if we got it now. Hold on a second. I think we got it now. There we go. Thanks. I want to talk about struggling with strength, pitfalls of being a strong Christian. I think that we can look around at ourselves. We look at ourselves. Probably most everybody here thinks of themselves, oh, I'm a pretty strong Christian. I would think of myself as at least somewhat strong. I think like most of us here, we think of ourselves as people that have a reasonable amount of faith and a decent amount of strength to endure all kinds of difficulties. So I came up with a kind of a list of things that to me are like symptoms. If you meet these categories, you may think yourself a strong Christian, kind of like that you might be a redneck. Well, if you meet these, you might be a strong Christian. The first one, you're a lifelong member. You've been here as long as you can remember. If not here, then some other congregation. You've been coming to church since you've been small or since you, you know, like I said, since as long as you can remember, however long that may be. Maybe you take a leadership role in the church. Maybe you're a teacher. Maybe you do scripture reading. Maybe you whatever. You do something. You clean the building. The list goes on and on and on. There's all kinds of things you could do. Maybe you take a leadership role. Maybe you have perfect attendance. You know, you're here on a Sunday night, so your attendance is probably decent. Maybe you come on Sunday mornings, Sunday nights, most Wednesdays, if not all Wednesdays. Maybe even make it for ladies and men's Bible class. So, I mean, you're really a stellar attendee, if you might call it that. Might be a strong Christian. Or you might think you're a strong Christian, let's put it that way. Here's one I think all of us have. Just looking around, you have your own seat, don't you? You got that one spot, that's where you sit. You know, you count up, this is my spot, 8 rows up, I'm going to sit right on the corner, bam, that's where I am. We all got our spot, if you will. I mean, looking around, everybody's pretty much in their spot. You know, it'd be pretty easy to take attendance. Maybe you go through some Bible classes and you're like, man, I already know all this stuff, you know. This Bible class is way too easy for me. I need to go to like university level. Because the things I'm hearing, this is like a review. So maybe the Bible classes aren't that difficult. Maybe it's simple. Not a hard thing. If you're a man, maybe you go to business meetings. If not most times, then maybe, I mean, if not every time, maybe most times. You show up, you're there for the exciting times that we have. You know, and you say, yeah, I'm part of this group. I'm a strong Christian. Other people know you as a Christian. You know, you go to work and people are like, oh, you know, that guy, he's a Christian. Let me ask him about this random Bible question that I have. Maybe you've had conversations like that. So you think, oh, man, if so-and-so thinks I'm a Christian, obviously I must be a strong Christian. How else would they know? Maybe you've got some strong opinions on some hot-button topics. You know, maybe if someone comes up on you and says, hey, what do you think about that second sermon? And you'd be like, well, listen, let me sit down with you. I got a 4-hour dissertation I want to share with you on this. Or whatever else you want to talk about. You know, someone comes with instrumental music, oh, you better be there for 2 days. Talking to someone about that. You know, maybe you have some strong opinions on these things. So, man, must be a strong Christian if I think that. Maybe you attend some extra Bible classes. You attend on Friday nights. Maybe you go to gospel meetings. You know, you've been to Washington, you've been to Fairlawn, you've been to Piscataway, you've been to some Spanish places. Maybe you're really, you know, hyper, spiritual. You've been to some Spanish, or other language assemblies and things like that. You know, you look at this list and, you know, if someone, you know, hit the check mark, it was like, bam, hitting every single one, you'd say, man, I'm a pretty strong Christian. I got no problems. But let me tell you that the problem is that when we start hitting these check marks, and as we start to gain confidence, and we start to believe, you know what, I'm a really strong Christian, I'm doing well, I'm one of the best, I'm one of the more faithful people in this congregation or whatever, there start to be some problems that start to develop. And I want to tonight talk to you about three different problems. And this is not an exhaustive list. This is just a simple list of things that I said to myself, you know what, you need to deal with these a little bit more. And so I said, maybe someone else could benefit from it. So, thanks, Econ, for reading 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 1 through 12. And so this is talking, this passage, Paul's talking to the Corinthians about the Israelites as they're journeying through the wilderness and all this kind of stuff. And you look at the children of Israel and you would say, man, probably a lot of these people were really strong Christians or strong Israelites, whatever you want to call them at the time. Hebrews, you know, followers of God. You know, they saw all kinds of stuff in Egypt. They saw some plagues. They saw some miracles. They wake up in the morning. There's some bread miraculously on the ground. All kinds of things they would have seen. You would think that they would have like some really great faith. But turns out they didn't really have such great faith. They had all kinds of difficulties and all kinds of problems. They had, you know, problems with immorality. They had problems with idolatry. They had problems with murmuring, complaining, all kinds of stuff. And Paul ends all this. Verse 11 says, now these things happened to them as an example. It says, and they were written for our instruction upon whom the ends of the ages have come. These things happened to these Israelites so that we could learn from them. So that we could say, you know what? Bad things happened to these people. They made some bad choices. They did some dumb stuff. Let's not repeat the dumb stuff that they did. And then verse 12, therefore let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he does not fall. Oh, take heed that he does not fall. So I was thinking about that. I'm hitting these check marks, right? Bang, 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 bang. I put 9 bullets on. Maybe you're 9 out of 9. You know, you're like hyper strong, right? You know, 1 to 3, you need to work on it. 4 to 7, you know, pretty good. 8 to 9, bam, you're on top of it. Maybe you're in that 8 to 9 category, hitting those bullet points. I was thinking about this. This is just really when we need to be careful. Because we're starting to get to that point where we think we know what was going on. We think we're doing all the right stuff. We think, man, there's nowhere else for me to go. I'm already at 9 out of 9. What else am I going to do? That's just when dangers can come. So I want to talk to you guys about 3 things that could happen to you. I know that sometimes these things happen to me. And so, like I said, hopefully something that you can take from it. So 3 things when we're struggling with strength that we need to be careful of. And I'm obviously going to go into a little more detail as we go. The first one, limited social interaction. And you may think to yourself, well, that doesn't make sense. I'm here all the time. I have lots of social interaction with other Christians. We'll see. Comparing ourselves to others. Man, that's an easy one to fall into. Talk about that. And finally, the increased need for forbearance. Talk about that one a little bit. All these 3 things you might look at and you're like, man, I don't really know what you're talking about. Well, that's why the sermon is 35 minutes long and not 5. I think all these things are really important, really pertinent, things that we need to be careful about, especially the people that are here tonight, people that are probably hitting 7, 8, 9 of those points, that are really hitting those marks of strength. Not, you know, I got to take the own seat thing off there. That's not really a mark of strength. That's just your habitual. But, you know, really hitting those marks of strength. The first one I want to talk about is the limited social interaction. The way I laid this out is I got the problem, the result, the expectation, what does God expect you to do, and then some suggestions how you're going to get over the problem, more or less. So that's basically how it's laid out. So here's the problem, limited social interaction. See how many of these pertains to you. You may be surprised. Your social interaction at church is basically limited to those people that are around you, maybe like a 5-meter or 5-yard circle around you. That's the people that you talk to. You got like certain people that you talk to, and that's about it. You know, you get up at, you know, get up out of your seat after worship is over. You turn around and say, man, that was a great lesson. Or you know what, man, that was a terrible lesson. Next time, I hope someone else preaches. or whatever, right? The songs are so slow, or, oh man, the songs are so fast, or whatever, right? We have these conversations and talk about this or that, or, you know, how's your mom, how's your dad, you know, oh, your kid is really cute, or, man, that kid is ugly. You know, all kinds of conversations that we have. But think about it. We pretty much just talk around the people that are just around us, right? We get up, we talk a little while, then we head out the door. You might have some close friends in the church, you know, you might have somebody on the other side, if you will, that you talk to from time to time. But, you know, outside of church, if you will, extracurricular activities, extracurricular time, you don't spend a lot of time with other people, just maybe a couple people in the church that you know, or that you're really close with, let's call it, right? Sometimes you feel like you're so busy. You got all this church stuff going on. You're teaching classes. Oh, man, I got to count the money. Oh, I got to count the people. Oh, I got to do this. I got to do that. Oh, I got to take the Lord's Supper trays down. I got to straighten the books. Man, all these people keep leaving the books in such a mess. All this kind of stuff. You feel like you got all this stuff to do, and you don't have time, or you don't have inclination or whatever. It doesn't hit you. Hey, you know what? I probably should be engaging a lot more people, especially those new members or those weaker members. These are some problems that I know I deal with. And maybe as I'm saying them, you think to yourself, you know what? That's me sometimes. So what happens when we have these problems? Well, the first one is we have cliques or divisions. Where you got this group of people over here. I mean, here's a big obvious clique right over here. You know what I'm saying? It's like all these people, they even share a last name. It's like a joke. You know, we got cliques all over the place. Or could have cliques all over the place. Where, you know, there's a group of 8, 10, 15 people. They just conversate amongst themselves. And then outside that group, you don't really know that much stuff about anybody. You know, if I asked, you know, 10 people in here, you know, what is it that I do for a living? Do you know what I do for a living? Do you know what I do for a living? Some people may. If someone asks me what you do for a living, I got to tell you, I probably don't know. To me, that seems kind of bad. You know, amongst my clique, you know, I could probably tell you what everybody does. But, you know, outside that, how much do I really interact with other people? It's almost like we got multiple little churches meeting in the one big church building, instead of having one church, like we're supposed to. You might greet a new member once or twice, you know, Michael or Wes or somebody might say, hey, you know what? There's this new guy here, bang, 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 this is his name. You should say hi to him. So, you know, it's like the first day, so we're all like, hey, yeah, you know, let's go say hi to this guy. Next week, guess what? It's like he fell off the mat. You never say hi to him one more time. You probably even forget his name by the second or third week. Or you don't even know what he looks like. You probably even forgot that he was there. This happens. You know, we laugh about it, but doesn't it happen? Unfortunately. We could feel some close ties with some of the other strong people, right? Quote, unquote, strong people in the church. But outside that group of quote-unquote strong people, we'll feel almost no connection to anybody else. You know, I feel a strong connection to this person, this person, this person. But, you know, that person over there, I barely know a thing about them. You know, if I was having a hard time, they probably wouldn't say anything to me. If they were having a hard time, I would probably say nothing to them. We just don't have that strong connection to each other that probably we ought to. So you can see some of these problems. You can see how they can cause these results. And really, these problems are because you are here so much. It's just like a habit. If you don't break this habit, this is what happens. You're just here, you get in the rut, you're banned. Talking to the same people over and over again. You never talk to anybody else, and this is your habit. You've probably been here 5, 10, 15, 20, 50 years and been doing the same thing. It's a difficult thing to break. And that's why I call it a problem of the strong, because, man, the longer you do it, the harder it is. Harder it is to change. What's the expectation, though? God lays the expectation out for us. 1 Corinthians chapter 12. You know, we talk about fulfilling our purpose, and this was like one of the theme verses we talked about this. I'm not going to read the whole thing because that would probably take a while. But in this passage, Paul's talking about the body. And all the different members of the body, that we're all one body, et cetera, et cetera. Each member is just as valuable as every other member. Everyone has a function, and the body works when all the members are together. I want you to look start in verse, let's start in verse 20. It says, now there are many members, but one body. The eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you, or again, the head to the feet, I have no need of you. On the contrary, it's much truer that the members of the body, which seem to be weaker, are necessary. And those members of the body, which we deem less honorable, on these we bestow more abundant honor, and our less presentable members become much more presentable. Whereas our more presentable members have no need of it. But God has so composed the body, giving more abundant honor to that member which lacked. Notice verse 25. So that there may be no division in the body, but that the members may have the same care for one another. And if one member suffers, all the members suffers with it. All the members suffer with it. And if one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it. The expectation is that we're one body. I hate to tell you this, and you probably know this. You all have bodies, so I think you all know this. If you get a paper cut on your finger, right? My whole body is very upset. Maybe your body is too. I'm very upset about my paper cut. If I get a cut on my leg, guess what? My whole body is upset about it. My leg just doesn't say, oh man, I'm really upset. And my brain is like, yeah, let's just keep the pain down there. Keep that away from me. You know, my arm isn't like, hey, no, who cares about the leg? Everybody, the whole body cares about what's going on to any other member of the body. It's not like some compartmentalization that happens. But sometimes, isn't that what happens in the body of Christ? You know, one of the members suffers, but, well, that little group over there, maybe they'll care about it. This group over here, they don't care. Well, something's going on over there, well, maybe this group cares, but this group over here, they couldn't care less. They probably don't even know about it. It's not the expectation that God has for the body. We're all one body. There shouldn't be any division. When one person suffers, we should all suffer. When one person rejoices, we should all rejoice. And so we really need to be working on this conversating a little bit. And I'm going to talk about some suggestions here in a minute that maybe might help us with this. That's the expectation, that we all know, that we all care about each other, that we all rejoice and we all suffer together, because we're all one body. The other ones I'll look at is Philippians chapter 2. Verses 1 through 5, a familiar passage, I'm sure. Therefore, if there is any encouragement in Christ, if there is any consolation of love, if there is any fellowship of the Spirit, if any affection and compassion, make my joy complete by being of the same mind, maintaining the same love, united in spirit, intent on one purpose. Do these words sound like anything that Paul's trying to get across here? Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourself. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. Have this attitude in yourselves, which also was in Christ Jesus. Man, that's powerful. That's telling me, man, I better look. Forget looking at myself. I better be looking at every single other person that's around me and caring about every single other person that's around me. Look at verse 2. My joy complete by being of the same mind, maintaining the same love, united in spirit, intent on one purpose. Man, that's talking about being unified. That's talking about being together. We must be unified in love, and we must be looking towards having the mind of Christ. That selflessness, that humility, and of course Paul goes on to talk about that in those verses there. That's the expectation. The expectation is not, I know 10 people of my congregation of 153. Or I know 20 people in my congregation of 153. My congregation is, I know every single person, and then if one person hurts, I'm hurting. If one person's happy, I'm happy. That's the expectation. It's a tough expectation, but that's God's expectation. So here's some suggestions. So, you know, sometimes we throw out these lessons like, man, you need to do this better. And sometimes I listen to these and I'm like, man, that's true, I need to do this better. But how in the world am I going to do this? So I tried to make it easy for you and throw together some thoughts that either I had or I stole from people, mostly the latter. Number one, make an effort to interact with all members. Okay? Don't stand up and talk to the same people you've been talking to for the whole time. You know, maybe you say, oh, I sit over here. I'm going to straight up get up right after church and I'm going to walk over there. Or whatever. You know, I sit in the back, I'm going to walk to the front and talk to some other people. Because I've been talking to these same people for 20 years, I probably know their life better than they do. They don't even know it. Try to change it up a little bit. Number two, this is going to be difficult because I think we got imprints in our seats. Change your seat. Sit somewhere else. You know, you sit in the back, sit in the front. You sit on the right, sit on the left. You sit on the outside, sit on the inside. It's not that difficult. It's not a hard thing to do. It's called breaking a habit. You know what the natural reaction will be if we change our seat? It's going to be other people there. And guess what? You're probably going to talk to those people. It's a simple thing to do. It's not a big deal. You might have to move your little footstool or whatever other garbage you got in your area. But it's a simple thing we could do. And it could make a big difference. Make a special effort to talk to the newer members. You know, and I know this is, you know, if you're like me, I have to have a to-do list. Because I just have like 500,000 things that are going through my mind at any one time. And eventually I got to pull out my phone and be like, man, what in the world am I supposed to be doing right now? I have it at work. I have like 60 to-do items. You can guess how well that's going. Put a to-do list. Do something. Remind yourself, you know what? I need to talk to Brother X. Or I need to see Brother Y. And put a little post-it on your pew. Or do something, you know, in your Bible. Whatever it is. Remind yourself, hey, I need to go talk to these people. Make a special effort. It's an important thing to do. Here's another one that is important to do. Have some hospitality. You know, that's one thing that's in the Bible a lot, but I feel like we don't do it very much. You know, regularly engage in hospitality. My wife told me about this idea that somebody told her, or maybe she had it, I don't know. Either way, I didn't have the idea, so I'm going to share it with you anyway. The idea was, have a jar in your house, and put the name of every member in the jar. And then throughout the year, pull a couple names out of the jar, and invite them over for dinner, or whatever. You know, by the end of the year, guess what? You've invited every single member over. I mean, you could do it over 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, whatever you want to do. But that's a way that you can practically get to know people. I thought that was a pretty smart idea. Like I said, I wish I could take credit for it, but it wasn't me. You know, Romans chapter 12, verse 13, I'm not going to turn there. He explicitly points out, and other places too, we need to be given to hospitality. That's one way that you could do it. And that will broaden your social horizons, we'll say. I put a big caution on this one. Utilize social media. Why did I put a caution on it? Because people are playing too many games and stuff on the social media. It's out of control. And posting all kind of dumb stuff. But social media can be a good thing. See what other people are doing. See how people's lives are going. Send messages, all this kind of thing. Sometimes it can be a good thing. So if you're not engaged in that, maybe that's something else that you can utilize. Don't make it your exclusive method of reaching out to other people, though. That is not a good idea. Trust me on that one. I don't use social media, though, but not that much anyway. But just be careful of that. So, again, reach out. I think that's how I could summarize this. Reach out. Talk to some new people. Do something different. When you've been here for so long, it's so easy for us to just stay in the same place over and for a long period of time, talk to the same people over and over. Because that's just a comfortable thing to do. Go out of your comfort zone, talk to somebody new. You may not even know their name anymore. Go talk to them and see how they're doing. Number two, I've got to move on. Comparing yourself to others. I think this is like a natural thing that we do. You do it at the job. You say, oh man, how much is he making? Oh man, I'm making more than that. Oh, how much is that person doing? Oh man, did you see what that guy was doing? We compare ourselves to other people, and usually we try to compare ourselves to people that are worse than us so that we feel better. I mean, that's just the natural thing we do. Oh man, look at that guy. You know, look, what is he doing over there? What a dumb person. You know, oh man, what a terrible driver. I'm a much better driver than that guy. You know, we probably do it on a daily basis. You don't even realize it. You know, the things that we say, basically that's what we do. We view ourselves here probably as the more faithful members. You know, we look around and there's 54 or plus or minus people here. And we're like, yeah, man, I'm pretty good. I'm here and I'm in the top third of this congregation probably because, you know, only a third is here. Or whatever, you know, and I'm just throwing that out there. But in general, you may view yourself as, I'm a stronger member. I'm a more faithful member. I'm a pretty good person relative to the people around me, you might say. This is not necessarily a problem, but you'll see why it's a problem later. We put a lot of effort into our faith, into what we might call church-related activities. All different kinds of things. We spend a lot of time with them. And sometimes we see members struggling with things that we never had to struggle with. You know, people could struggle with, I'll just use Tom, because he put it out there. He struggled with addiction, right? I never struggled with drug addiction. But that doesn't necessarily, and I'm not trying to put Tom down, obviously. I struggle with things that Tom doesn't struggle with. Tom struggles with things that I don't struggle with. But we might look at other people struggling with things, and we might say, man, That's a really big problem, you know. That guy's, he was addicted to drugs, you know. What's wrong with me? Oh, I just have pride. That's not a big deal. Or whatever it is, you know. We may look at people that have problems that we've never experienced, or problems that we've overcome, and that could be a large spectrum of things. Could be attendance, could be addiction, could be whatever. Put, you know, stealing things, whatever. I think all of us have had different problems from time to time. So that's the problem. And so what's the result? Well, the first result is we may not recognize our own needs. We may not recognize where we need to improve, particularly because to us, our needs don't appear that severe. And if I got a brother that's dealing with, you know, this guy likes to kill people, that's a pretty severe problem. I don't deal with that. And so in comparison to him, I might say, man, my problems are nothing, or I don't have any problems. This guy's dealing with some serious issues. So we may be blinded to the problems that we have. Another thing that could happen is we justify not improving or not getting better or not doing things because we look at other people and we say, man, that guy's doing nothing. I'm doing 100 things. He's doing 5. I'm not going to start doing anything more until this guy starts doing 100 things too. You know, that kind of goes back to what I was saying before about doing a lot of things. That kind of leads to it. The more we do, the easier it is to compare ourselves with other people and say, man, I'm doing a lot. That guy, John, is doing nothing. So I ain't doing anything until John picks up the pace. And finally, and this is one that we have to be really careful of. Sometimes we omit things that we should do to build up ourselves because we're so busy doing other stuff or we think we're meeting our quote-unquote church time quota by doing other things. Let me give you an example I heard somebody said once. Preachers, I guess, I've heard, have to deal with this a lot. They spend so much time trying to help everybody else. You know, they're evangelizing here. They're helping that family there. They're reaching out to the sick person there. They're encouraging here. They're doing this, that, and the other thing. And guess what? The family is lost. Their own family is lost. It happens a lot. More often than you might think. We got to remember that we got to do for ourselves also. We need to build ourselves up, be aware of our own weaknesses that need to be taken care of. So what's the expectation here? 2 Corinthians chapter 10, we'll turn there. I'm not going to get into the context of it, but just take the point. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 12 and 18. For we are not bold to class or compare ourselves with some of those who commend themselves. But when they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves with themselves, they are without understanding, or they are not wise. Verse 18. For it is not he who commends himself that is approved, but he whom the Lord commends. Now, obviously, this is something beyond just what we're talking about, but the point is still valid. It isn't too wise to try to compare myself to somebody else and say, well, because I am good and that person is bad, relatively speaking, I am therefore approved by God. I'm qualified as a faithful person, we'll say, or whatever. That's not a wise thing to do. We can't compare ourselves to other people and say, well, because I'm better than such and such, I'm good. Well, you might both be bad. You know, that's not a valid comparison. That's not a valid argument. The only approval that matters, we see there in verse 18, is if God says you're approved, then you're approved. If you're as good as what God says you need to be, then you're approved. Not if you're better than 99% of the population. That doesn't mean a thing. What matters is, are you meeting God's expectations? If you are, then good for you. If not, then we need to do some work. Luke chapter 8. Verses 9 through 14, I won't read it, but you can turn to Luke 18 because I'm going to turn to a different passage there in a second. Luke chapter 18, verse 9 through 14 talks about the prayer of the publican and the Pharisee. And when you read this, it hardly merits much discussion. When you read this, it's hard to miss how foolish the Pharisee sounds and how foolish he actually is by comparing himself. He's saying, oh, I'm so good, I'm so grateful that I'm not as bad as this tax collector. Well, whoop-dee-doo, you know, who cares? That's so foolish for us to think that we're so great because oh, I'm not as bad as that guy. That doesn't make a difference. We need to be comparing ourselves to God, comparing ourselves to Christ. And I'll be talking about that in just a minute. The last thing I want to point out is verses 18 through 23, same chapter, Luke 18. This is the story of the rich young ruler. I want to read this because I think this is interesting. I made this point before, but it fits in pretty good here. A ruler questioned him, saying, "Good teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" Jesus said to him, "Why do you call me good? No one is good except God alone. You know the commandments. Do not commit adultery. Do not murder. Do not steal. Do not bear false witness. Honor your father and mother." He said, "All these things I kept from my youth." Man, the guy seems like a pretty decent guy. You know, he hasn't killed anybody. Hasn't lied that much. He's not an adulterer. Honors his father and mother. Basically, the guy's saying, "I do all this good stuff, man. I'm pretty good already." I want you to notice this, verse 22. When Jesus heard this, he said to him, "One thing you still lack." It's not like Jesus pulled out the laundry list and said, "All right, well, sit down, son. You got a lot to learn." He said, "One thing you lack." He said, "You need to go sell your possessions to the poor. Sell your possessions and give to the poor. One thing you lack." If this guy lacked one thing, and we were making like a comparison between this guy and everybody else, I would probably put this guy pretty close to the top. I would say this guy is top decile, top 1%. If he's doing all the commandments, Jesus obviously agrees. He says he only lacks one thing. He's obviously a good guy. But it's not enough. It's not enough. He could be better than everybody else, but it's not enough. One thing he lacked. Even that one thing that you lack can be enough to keep you out of heaven. It doesn't matter how many people you're better than. It doesn't make one difference. We can never really attain perfection. We have to keep working. We always have to keep striving. We'll never make perfection until we get to heaven. So here's some suggestions. One, learn to compare yourself with Christ. Stop looking around you and saying, "Oh, I'm better than this guy. I'm better than this guy. I'm better than that woman. I'm better than that little whatever." You know? Look at Christ. Look at His example. Study His life. Read through the experiences. Read through His life. Read the conversations that He had. Read the experiences that He had. Look at the decisions that He made. Read His prayers. Look what was in His heart. Study Him and see how you can be more like Him. That's what we need to do. We need to be more like Christ. Let's start comparing ourselves with Christ. As soon as you start doing that, man, your list is going to get real long, real quick. And then it'll be a lot easier to stop looking at other people and saying, "Oh man, I'm better than that person." We talked about, you're so busy you can't do some things because, you know, for whatever reason. Here's something you could do. Encourage other people to be involved. Encourage them positively. What I mean by that is, don't go up to somebody and be like, "Man, listen, you do nothing. Here's something you should do now. Here you go." Guess what? That person could be like, "Buddy, I'm so busy too. I can't do this." And you're not going to get anywhere. Say, approach someone in a positive way. Someone in a personal way. If you approach someone in a positive, personal way, it's going to be a lot more effective at having them to help you or even to take over some of the responsibilities that you are doing. And by doing so, especially if you're approaching somebody that isn't doing a lot, man, you're opening the door for them to get more and more involved. You're encouraging them. You're coaching them. You're helping them. You're being a leader who's helping other people to follow after Christ. That's a suggestion. Just throwing it out there. And finally, remember you need to work on yourself too. It's not always about, you know, "Oh, I got to teach XYZ classes. Oh, man, I got to prepare for this. Oh, I got to do that. Oh, I got to clean this." You know, whatever. Remember, you need to focus on yourself too. Remember, you need to develop yourself also. If we're so busy focusing on everybody else, we're going to lose sight of the improvements we need to make on ourselves. And that's not a place that we want to be. All right, last one that we're going to talk about. The increased need for forbearance. I had no idea how I was going to title this one. This is what I came up with. It probably sounds super confusing. So hopefully I'll explain it in a way that will make it a little more clear. As we become more familiar with people, the tendency is that we fight more often. It's just like a natural thing. I don't know why it is. Maybe some psychologist could tell me. But as we become more familiar with people, it becomes easier and easier and easier to get in fights with them, to have contention, to have disagreement, to have arguments, to be at odds. Just think about it in the family. If you got a family, most of us have families, who are the people you have the biggest fights with? Your family. Why is that? I have no idea. That's just the way it is. It's the same way in the church, isn't it? People that we're really close to, people that have a lot of the same common goals and desires, people that we have the biggest fights with. Maybe one reason is we have these strong opinions on things. Yeah, man, obviously the church is important. And all of us think it's important. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. We all think the church is important. We think God is important. We think all these different things are important. We have all these really strong opinions on things. And, you know, one person may think this is the way to do it. This other person may think this is the way to do it. And, you know, we got a lot of things on our minds. And you know, when we talk about it, you know, this person butts heads with this person. And, man, it just turns into a big fight. It's a big problem. Whether you realize it or not. Well, what's the result? Well, tell me if this isn't true. We tend to make mountains out of molehills. We have small problems. You know, what color are we going to paint the walls? That has divided churches. You know, what kind of roof should we put on the building? Should we have a tin roof or should we put shingles on? Divided churches over what kind of roof they're going to have. You think, man, that's totally ridiculous. But that's the kind of stupid things that people fight about. And it may not divide the church, but it may divide people in the church. You know, this person believes this, this person believes that. And it may not even be something biblical. They just may be upset about how they park the car in the parking lot. People get fight about it, and they don't talk to each other anymore. We have these strong feelings, we have these strong emotions, and for some reason, we always make big deals out of things that are not. Sometimes the issue becomes personal. You know, we have a small discrepancy about, well, you know, I think the brightness on that light should be at like 33%. Well, I think it should be at 25%. Well, listen, the last time that we did it, and it goes on, and you bring everything else into the picture that's ever, well, when I was 12 years old, you stole my lollipop. Well, when I was 15, you broke my hockey stick. And, you know, it sounds ridiculous, but that's the kind of stuff that comes back to us. And it's no longer about how bright are we going to have the lights. It's, you know, I hate you, you're a jerk, you know, all that. I got 7% of my battery, so that's telling me I'm going long. Boop. See it like hurried itself on by itself. And like I said, sometimes the effects of these things are long lasting. They could last years, they could last the rest of your life. Where just these issues have impacts that go forever. I was talking to somebody at work. And it's a guy I really respect. He's a really nice guy, really good guy, good worker, all that good stuff. And he was telling me he was an electrician. And he was telling me he worked with his brother. You know, his brother was a contractor, and the guy I was talking to was an electrician. And, you know, they worked together and such and such. And they got into a disagreement about putting a $15 receptacle in the garage. The electrician, the guy I was talking to, wanted to put it in. The contractor says, no, I don't want to pay the $15. And they fought about it. They fought about it, and they fought about it. Eventually, the guy just put the receptacle in on his own dime because, you know, that's what he thought he wanted to do, and they didn't talk to each other for 3 years. You see, that's like a ridiculous thing. We look at that, and we're like, man, $15, we're getting all upset about a receptacle in a garage. Come on. That's the kind of stupid things that we fight about. That's the kind of dumb stuff that causes problems that can last years. What's the expectation? Colossians chapter 3. Verses 12 through 14. I want you to notice some of the words that are used here. It says, so as those who have been chosen of God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience, bearing with one another, forgiving one another. Whoever has a complaint against anyone, just as the Lord forgave you, so also should you. Beyond all these things, put on love, which is the perfect bond of unity. Man, you read those things, there's a lot of stuff in there that sounds like we need to be nice to each other. We need to be willing to forgive each other. We need to have compassion. We need to have empathy. We need to be willing to forgive. We need to bear with one another. There's going to be times where we're going to rub each other the wrong way. Guess what? It's natural. It's going to happen. You know, I might say something that you might take offense to. You might say something that I take offense to. And, you know, is that the time that we need to have a knockout, drag-out brawl and then never speak to each other for 5 years? I think that's probably not the best option. We need to be willing to bear with one another. We need to be willing to forgive one another. If somebody makes a mistake, forgive them. Say, listen, you know what? I know you did this thing. It's okay. I forgive you. Let's move on. You know, we're brothers, we're sisters. Let's put this past us. It's not that serious. And finally, put on love. You notice it says there in verse 14, put on love, the perfect bond of unity. I think it's there for a reason. If you love each other, if we care about each other, if we put each other first, man, whatever color the walls are is not going to stop me from wanting to see my friends and my brothers and my sisters. Or whatever it is. Or how you park outside, you park in the most crazy way, I still am going to love you. I'm going to put it past, you know, I'm going to let that go. We need to be thinking that way. Philippians chapter 2. I'll just touch on it real quick. I got like 1% left, so this is like real serious. Tells us we shouldn't be complaining. We shouldn't be disputing. Do all things without complaining or disputing. It reminds me of murmuring that we see in the Israelites doing. Murmuring, gossiping, complaining. You know, guess what those things do? They tear us down. They eliminate the honor and the dignity that we all have. Let's not do those things. Let's be unified. Let's bear with one another. So some suggestions. I'm going to throw these all up here so in case the computer dies, at least you saw them. One, we need to recognize the importance of patience. We need to recognize that having forbearance and dealing with each other is critical. There's simply no other option. We can say, oh man, well you should say nicer things. Guess what? It's not always going to happen. Or you should do better things better. It's not always going to happen. At the end of the day, the thing that cleans all that up is the love that we have for each other. The patience that we have for each other. We need to have that. Number two, here's a real serious suggestion. Focus on the issue at hand. How many times we focus on it, we talk about an issue, and it becomes, instead of how dim are the lights, oh, we bring everything into the picture and it's this humongous fight about who, everything possible. That's not a good way to resolve a problem. That's just a big way to have a big argument. Focus on the problem at hand. Focus on the issue at hand. And finally, keep the goal in mind. We want to serve each other. We want to serve God. We want to encourage one another. We want all of us to go to heaven. I think that's what we all want. We all want to go to heaven. We want to spend eternity with people that we care about. We don't want to spend eternity with one guy on that side of heaven and that guy on that side of heaven. I don't think that's really what would happen, but you get the idea. I don't think that's going to work out too well. We gotta deal with our problems. We gotta have patience with one another. We gotta recognize that we're all gonna make mistakes. And we gotta forgive each other. Have that love, and it becomes a lot more natural. I thank you for your patience and forbearance. As we talk tonight, some of these things. I think that they're really important. I think that some of these things we could all work on. The limited social interaction. I sound like such an engineer when I say these things. Work on talking to more people. Change your seat. Do something. Show some hospitality. Get around. Know these people that we're trying to go to heaven with. Comparing yourselves to others, be careful of that. Look at Christ. We need to be more like Christ, not like Joe Smith. And finally, we need to work on our forbearance, our patience, our willingness to forgive, our willingness to love. These are some things that we struggle with. Because we're strong, we struggle with these things. And it's some things that we all need to work on. I thank you again, guys, very much for your patience and your attention. Tonight, if there's anyone here that is struggling with whatever it is, maybe you're a Christian and you know, you're dealing